Welcome to another episode of Random Trek, the podcast, where I, your host, Scott McNulty, watch a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest today, or tonight, depending on where you are, is Kat Griffiths. Did I say that right? You told me how to say it, and then I was thinking about it.
Every single one, yes, it is, but every single one of my appearances now anywhere always ends up with people going, did I say it right? Did I say it right?
Well, I'm glad to keep that streak alive. So thank you, Kat, for being on. So I know that you are, well, why don't you introduce yourself and let the people of the internet know a little bit about yourself?
I am a podcaster / animal lover / lover of many fandoms and fandom in general. The mere concept of it, I enjoy. I'm on a wonderful podcast called Verity, which is a Doctor Who podcast comprised solely of six wonderful women from around the world who adore Doctor Who and the many facets of it. Yeah, that's me in a nutshell. Animals, fandom, Doctor Who, Verity.
What more could you ask for?
Yeah.
Now, I was going to say, before I let you introduce yourself, that you are probably best known as a fan of Doctor Who, but we're not going to talk about Doctor Who. So hopefully this is not a problem. But
I run in many circles, so I think we'll be okay.
So are you also a fan of Star Trek?
Somewhat. Yes, certain aspects of it.
Ah, interesting. What aspects of Star Trek are you a fan of?
The Next Generation.
Ah, okay. So that my normal question is, what series is your favorite? So would you say that The Next Generation is your favorite Star Trek series?
Yeah. That's what I was raised on. That's my mother's favorite series, so that's my favorite series.
It runs in the family.
Yes.
Well, I mean, The Next Generation is where I basically started my Star Trek fandom, so I understand where you're coming from. Although Deep Space Nine, as I've said on countless episodes of this show, is my favorite series of Star Trek. The Next Generation has a special place in my heart. But we're not going to talk about The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine on this podcast, because the random Trek episode machine spat out an original series episode, and in fact, a pivotal original series episode, where no man has gone before, which is, in fact, the second pilot for Star Trek. So this is the second Star Trek episode ever. It's craziness. Although it was the third episode broadcast on TV, which is even crazier when you watch it, because the way they broadcast them makes no sense. But yeah, so this is they didn't like the original pilot that had Christopher Pike as captain. There was no Captain Kirk. There was Spock, but there was no Sulu. There was no McCoy. So they reshot a different pilot. They brought in William Shatner, and they shot this Where No Man Has Gone Before pilot, which is actually amazing when you watch it, how much stuff in this episode is kind of Star Trek canon and stuff that is familiar to a Star Trek fan of this day and age, which is crazy. There's also a lot of casual sexism, but it was the 60s, so what can you do? So why don't we just jump right in to Where No Man Has Gone Before. It starts off with our Captain Kirk entering an entry in his log talking about they picked up a recorded distress signal from this probe that was shot out of the galaxy many, many years ago that everyone was presumed lost. And so they found it and they're very excited, but they don't know what to do. And so we switch to the briefing lounge, which looks kind of like a rec room, where Captain Kirk and Spock are playing three-dimensional chess. So right from the beginning, crazy games are part of Star Trek, which I am fascinated by the weird games that are in Star Trek. And 3D chess is the original weird game on Star Trek.
That's a real thing now.
It is a real thing now, yes. So you can go out and buy and play three-dimensional chess. You could probably do it like on your iPhone or something now. I have not looked into that, but I bet there's an app for that now. And one of the weird things this episode, obviously, is a pilot, so things are different. Spock looks a little more satanic, but less satanic than he did in the original pilot. They softened him a tiny bit. They also have very soft-looking shirts And they are like turtlenecks, which they look very cozy.
They look like towels. Like, or no, not even towels.
Like terry cloth?
Like those blankets you can buy that have like the big animals on them, like puppies or horse or those ones.
They look very cozy. Mm-hmm. I just want to take a nap in one of those things. They have like a zipper on a poorly concealed zipper on the top. You know, they were working out the costumery, that's what I'm saying here. Mm-hmm. So they're playing some chess. They spend a lot of time establishing that Spock has no emotions. And he is not irritated by Captain Kirk winning three-dimensional chess. Although Spock was pretty sure he was going to win. But he doesn't. And then Spock talks about how his ancestor, he's half human and half Vulcan. Which, you know, hooray for that. And then they get a call that they have found an object of some sort, and Captain Kirk says, beam it aboard, why not?
Quarantine? What's quarantine?
What's the worst can happen? So they beam it aboard, and they rush to the transporter room where we meet Scotty, and he is fiddling with the transporter, beaming the object aboard. They beam it aboard. Spock says, I hope that the tapes are not hurt. Which is amusing to me. suddenly, it starts to transmit and everybody freaks out. And Captain Kirk says, red alert! And then they kind of just like casually saunter out of the transporter room on their way to the bridge. They don't seem to be in any particular hurry, which seemed a little strange to me. And also, the thing starts to transmit and then they never really talk about that for the rest of the episode. Unless I missed a key component of the episode. It's just kind of like...
I don't think they do. I think that's just kind of a, hey, there's something weird going on.
And let's never talk about this probe again.
And we'll never talk about the probe again.
That's right. Because even weirder things happen. And so they go to their... and that's the teaser. So then the traditional Star Trek thingy opens, the theme song, which was different when it was broadcast, but we don't need to get too deep on Star Trek nerdery. But now it's the traditional, they replaced it in streaming or whatever, they replaced it with the traditional Star Trek opener. And we go aboard the bridge where we meet Gary Mitchell. And he joins them. Actually, he joins them in the turbo lift as they're going to the bridge. He makes some chit chat with Kirk and Spock, and they pretty early on establish that Gary Mitchell is kind of creepy. Mm-hmm. I feel like even before the wacky things that happen to him, he's kind of a jerk and a creep, and I don't care for him. And so on the bridge, Mitchell takes his station, and Spock is scanning for something, a message of some sort, and they're approaching the edge of the galaxy, which I think is kind of bold to start your pilot at the very edge of the galaxy. And that's what they do. So they're looking for a marker that the Valiant, which is the ship that blew up, I guess left 200 years ago. And Captain Kirk orders the department heads for some reason to come to the bridge. And so they do. And we've got, and then before that, there's another weird thing before the department heads come up. So everybody's on the bridge. Everybody seems to have something to do, except for a young female yeoman whose job seems to be to stand behind Captain Kirk and look worried. It's very strange. And so Captain Kirk gets up and almost runs into her, and he says, Yeoman Jones. And she says, no, my name is Smith, Captain. And he's like, that's right. What are you doing? He doesn't even actually ask her what she's doing. She's just kind of standing there. It was very strange. And she.
It was supposed to be his new yeoman, I think.
So
I read that somewhere.
So his new yeoman assigned to him to help him, like, hand him things, as we see in later. Yes. Oh. So she doesn't do much, but she stands there, and she'll come into play in the creepiness of Mitchell in a little bit. And so we see the department heads show up, and Chief Medical Officer Dr. Mark Piper. Who's that? Yes, no McCoy in this. We've got Dr. Piper, who is an elderly, well, not elderly, but an older gentleman. And there's a new psychiatrist, Dr. Elizabeth Daner, I guess his name is. Donner? Daner? who they picked up on a colony, and she is very interested in long-term effects of space travel on the crew members.
She seems to be very interested in, like, any sort of catastrophe and its effects on the crew. It's like, can we blow something up so I can see what the crew would do?
It's true. There is a red alert happening, and she's like, oh, this is a great opportunity for me to study this, Captain. Do you mind if I study the crew members' reactions? And the captain's kind of like, we have things to do so we don't all die. And she's very excited about that prospect. And Sulu, who apparently is now is an astrosciences physicist in this episode. I guess he gets upgraded to navigator later.
Gotta start somewhere.
That's right. He just shows up. He doesn't say anything at the very beginning. But later in the episode, he'll do some math, so it's all right. And this is where Mitchell then decides, well, you know, we're in a dangerous situation, so I should hit on this new psychiatrist lady who's here. So he does. She rebuffs his advances, to which he mutters under his breath that she's a walking freezer unit that she hears, and she is not appreciative of that. Further sealing the fact that Mitchell is a creep. Mm-hmm. He's pretty darn creepy. And then Spock somehow gets the message from the Valiant, and they were looking for ESP, like they were searching records for ESP in humans. And this is kind of a weird part of this episode, where Captain Kirk turns to Dr. Donner and says, well, what do you know about ESP? And she says, well, it's an established scientific fact that many humans have ESP abilities and can read the back of cards and see the future slightly. Which I thought, is that really a scientific fact, Dr. Donner? I don't know.
I think she just made that up.
I think she did as well. And then she says, oh, I myself scored rather highly for ESP. And everyone was like, thanks, Dr. Donner. That's great. And then we find out, oh no, the Valiant didn't get destroyed in some sort of accident, as was thought, but it seems to have the captain self-destructed for some reason. But we don't know why. Something bad has happened on the Valiant. And so Captain Kirk does what you'd think he would do and orders that they leave the galaxy. Which I did not understand at all. But hey, they're going to leave the galaxy. So they attempt to leave the galaxy. Their scanners don't show that there's any galactic barrier, which is what this is called later in Star Trek lore. But in fact, there is one. And so they are approaching it. Doesn't show up in scanners. But they seem to figure out that there's something there. When they make contact, there's like a very 60s scene with inverted colors and flashes that happen to Mitchell and the psychiatrist, and they both drop to the deck, and things are exploding, stuff is happening, and Spock rushes over to the helm to steer the ship clear, and they get out of the barrier, whatever it was. And Spock tells Kirk that power is out, the warp engines, although they don't call them warp engines in this episode, are shorted, and 9 people are dead. And he asks his friend Gary, he's like, Gary, are you all right? And Gary's like, oh, I feel a little weak. And he turns and shows his face. And oh my gosh, he has creepy silver eyes now that they take in like a super zoom, in case you might not have noticed.
Honestly, the best part of the entire episode for me is those creepy silver eyes, because even when they're not shown close up and he's just like in the background, mm-hmm. he still has the creepy silver eyes. So I don't know if it was just because I watched the remastered
version. I think even before the remastered version, those creepy silver eyes showed up very well. This is one of those episodes where I have done some research. I don't do a lot of research for this podcast other than watching, because the one thing I wanted to know was, how did they get his eyes to look like creepy silver eyes? Mm-hmm. Because it's a very effective thing. And now I imagine we would use, you know, like CGI or something. But then they took 2 primitive 1960s contact lenses, put some aluminum foil between the two, sandwiched it all together, and shoved it in his eyes.
Oh, that'd be like putting half of a Coke bottle in your eyes.
It was apparently extremely painful, and he could only keep them in for like 10 minutes at a time. And apparently they poked like little pinholes in the center so he could see through them. and that's why he held his head back, because that was the only way he could see through the contact lenses when he had them in. So I do not envy the actor who played Gary Mitchell in this episode, although the effect is very good.
He's kind of allowed to be a bit of a creep, just to, you know, because he has to put up with that later on.
It is true. Man, it makes it, I have a thing about my eyes and touching them and putting things in them, so it just kind of grosses me out, the idea.
Ugh. I am exactly the same way. I will never wear contacts. I watch people on TV put contacts in, and I'm like, nope, 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 nope.
Yeah, so I can't even imagine putting 1960s aluminum foiled contact lenses in. It is kind of gross. But kudos to him, because it looks really cool. So they send him off to sickbay because something ain't right. They can figure that out. And so they're supervising repairs, and they're trying to figure out what to do. And Captain Kirk is Spock actually is reviewing some medical records, which is very amusing because they show him reviewing these, and they're basically like pictures of like printed out 60s medical records, which is, it just amuses me for some reason. And we find out that both Gary Mitchell and Dr. Donner have unusually high ESP ratings, because apparently in Starfleet they test you for ESP before you go off to go on a starship, I guess. Because everybody's concerned about ESP now. So they both have 20 out of 100, apparently. And that means they have the highest scores on the ship. And apparently the other 9 people who died also had very high scores, but they did not survive. So
I like to think that all the starship captains had to have scored like a 0 on the ESP thing, just so they have no idea what's coming. So they'll be like, yes, of course we'll keep going on in the galaxy, even though we're told we should stop.
Sure, we'll go through the galactic barrier. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, and Dr. Donner is... what is she doing? She is defending people with ESP because Captain Kirk is like, well, clearly something is not right. So, you know, this must have only affected people with ESP, and this could be dangerous. And she's like, no, ESP is only good, and it cannot be used for bad. And Spock disagrees, and he's like, what about people who can see through solid objects or cause spontaneous combustion?
That line just got me. What about people that can make other people spontaneously combust?
What about
that? How is that good?
Explain that, Doctor. He has a point. It's not good.
That would never be a good thing, ever.
That's right. I am completely against causing spontaneous combustion in other people. I agree with you, Spock. Even though it is a little crazy. And then we switch to sickbay, where Mitchell is recuperating in a little bed there with a screen reading through things. And there's a weird shot that lasts for like 40 seconds where he's just basically just laying in bed. And I was not quite sure why they showed this shot. But after about 40 seconds, in comes Captain Kirk. And this is where we really find out that Mitchell and Captain Kirk have known each other for a long time. They were at Starfleet Academy together. Mitchell took a class of Captain Kirk's because apparently Captain Kirk taught at Starfleet Academy, and he was a difficult teacher. So in order to pass Captain Kirk's class, I think I got this right, Mitchell paid a young blonde cadet to seduce Captain Kirk, and Captain Kirk almost married her, which furthering the creepy Mitchell vibe.
I just like to think that before that happened, like, that was the catalyst, and that Kirk wasn't womanizing or anything at all, and then that happened, and he's like, oh, well, you know, if I can be like this...
This is pretty good.
This is pretty awesome.
That's true, because Mitchell says that Captain Kirk in Starfleet Academy was very studious, and he was a walking pile of books, which is really not the Captain Kirk we learn about in later episodes.
Or the movies.
That's true. Or anything else. Captain Kirk is many things, but a noted reader is not one of them. So this is the pivotal point at which his character changes, all thanks to creepy Gary Mitchell. Even before he had creepy silver eyes, he was a creep. Captain Kirk says, okay, well, you know, something's going on with you, Gary, even though you feel fine. You've got crazy silver eyes, because Gary is telling everybody, I feel fine. The doctor thinks I'm fine. The Dr. Piper says that he's in perfect health. And Captain Kirk says, well, I think something is up with you. So I'm going to have Dr. Donner study you. Gary Mitchell, not so excited about this. He says something about, there are so many other women on the ship. Why can't you have one of them study me? And you're like, oh, sheesh. Can't you just be a little bit less of a creep, Gary? Come on. And he's like, nope, I'm a creep to the core.
Does not compute.
Does not compute, no. And then Captain Kirk's like, no, you know, she's an expert. She'll study you, and I got to go be a captain. And as he's leaving, Gary Mitchell says, didn't I say you'd better be good to me in a weird, echoey voice? Which makes Captain Kirk stop and look back. But once he looks back, Mitchell's just reading a book. So how bad could it be?
He couldn't have said that. He was reading a book.
That's right. Everything's cool, Captain Kirk. Don't worry. Go back to the bridge. So he goes back to the bridge where Spock is having none of this Gary Mitchell business. And so basically he is spying on what Gary Mitchell is doing, which on one hand, as a proponent of privacy, I am disturbed. But on the other hand, Gary Mitchell is a creep with silver eyes. So I think it's okay.
I would be watching him even before he gets silver eyes, to be honest.
I think that is probably a good idea, especially since you're a woman. You should always keep an eye on Gary Mitchell. Never know what he's going to do. And so Spock is watching what he's doing, and he says to Captain Kirk, he's reading much faster than he was reading before. And he's reading pretty quickly, and he's using a little kind of like a remote control to turn the pages. He's got like a remote control Kindle that he's using to read through lots of books that he's found because he's got nothing else to do because they've confined him to sickbay. And so they're watching what he's doing. And then Dr. Donner enters sickbay and says, hey, Mitchell, I heard you calling me a walking freezer unit. I know you don't like me, but I'm here for you in my professional capacity. We have to get along. And he's like, well, all right. And he says that everyone thinks he has a fever or there's something wrong with him, but he feels fine. But maybe if the vital records on the sickbay wall changed, people would believe him. And so he uses the power of his mind to change his vital signs, which Dr. Donner is impressed with. And then he says, hey, watch this. And he makes all of the indicators fall to zero and passes out. And Dr. Donner is weirdly impressed by this, I think. It's probably the best thing to say.
He's the life at parties.
He's right. That's right. He could pass out on command. Oh, Gary.
Oh, Gary Mitchell. Because everyone talks to him with both of his names. That's never true. Just Gary, never just Mitchell. It's always, oh, Gary Mitchell.
It is one of those names that you have to say, just Gary Mitchell. You with your silver eyes and your constant passing out. What a card. And so then he wakes up after passing out. Dr. Donner's like, what did you do? And he's like, yeah, don't worry. And then she says, okay, won't worry. So have you memorized everything you've been reading? And he says, yes, I have. And so she decides to test him by opening a random book and asking what's on page 387. And he quotes this poem that apparently was written on some planet back in – way back in – or, yeah, way back in 1996. And it's apparently one of the most passionate – love poems ever read, ever written. And so Gary Mitchell takes this opportunity to kind of hit on her again. And she is not very excited. Well, actually, she's kind of intrigued. But then Lieutenant Kelso, who's another guy we never see again, comes in just to check on Mitchell. And Mitchell smiles and is like, haha, my eyes are lit up by the lovely doctor, which is kind of creepy, but that's what he says. And Kelso says, hey, the engines are in bad shape, but I'm doing some repairs. Mitchell says, hey, you should double check that relay thing you were working on because it's burnt out. And Kelso says, no, it isn't. I'm going to put it back and it'll work fine. And he's like, you better check. And so he runs off and checks and turns out that he was right. And
doesn't he say something like, if something gets turned on, the whole deck will blow or something like
that? Oh,
yes,
like,
there's some weird, you know, apocalyptic soundy.
Yes. Oh, he says if you activate those engines, the entire impulse deck will explode.
Yeah.
And Donner's like, how do you know that? And Kelso says, what's his face? Gary Mitchell says, Kelso was thinking it. I could see it in his mind. Oh, ESP. And so then we cut to the briefing room, which is a very large room for a briefing room in this episode. And Kelso says, gosh darn it, I don't know how he was knew this, but he was right. If we had put this in, the impulse deck, in fact, would have exploded. And Captain Kirk is like, well, I don't know what's going on. And then Dr. Donner walks in and she says, oh, I'm sorry, I'm late. I was just fascinated by Gary Mitchell. And everyone kind of rolls their eyes. and Scotty says, Captain Kirk's like, well, Scotty, tell Dr. Donner what you were telling me. And Scotty's like, oh, the controls were just going by themselves on the bridge. And Spock said, yes. And every time they were going like that, Mitchell was smiling creepily. And to which I thought, he kind of smiles creepily all the time, so how could you tell the difference? But apparently they put the two together, and they think that he is trying to take over the Enterprise slowly but surely. And Dr. Donner is like, no, he's fine. He's just misunderstood.
Oh, my.
She's fallen a little hard for this Gary Mitchell for some strange reason. And so Spock says, well, you know, we need to repair our ship, so we should go to Delta Vega, which is an uninhabited, automated mining planet. And while we're there, we should just leave Mitchell there. And Captain Kirk's like, what? Are you crazy? Or ships only go there every 20 years. He'd be all alone. And Spock says, well, I guess we could just kill him. And Kirk is a little nonplussed. And Dr. Donner is outraged and says, even for you Vulcans who have no emotions, don't you think it's a new level of cruelty to talk about a man you've served with in such a way? And everyone else is like, well, he is kind of dangerous.
He's kind of dangerous. He's kind of creepy. We don't really like him.
Never liked him anyway.
This is a good excuse.
That's right. This is the excuse we've always been looking for. And Captain Kirk is like, well, I don't really want to kill my friend, but let's go to Delta Vega, and maybe we can figure out what's going to happen. So they go to Delta Vega, which is this, I thought, when I first watched this, I thought it was an abandoned planet, but it's not. It's just an automated planet with nothing on it. And in sick bay, we find Gary Mitchell laying in sick in his bed still, and he says, gee, I'm thirsty. So he pours himself a glass of water using his mind into a silver space styrofoam cup, and then he telekinetically brings it to his hand. And then Spock and Kirk and Donner enter and see him kind of bring it floating across the room, and Kirk grabs it out of the air, and he's like, damn it, you're dangerous.
He's just jealous.
He is a little jealous. And they talk about, Donner says, Mitchell says, oh, I know we're around Delta Vega. I know what you're going to do, but I'm not going to let you force me down there. I need this ship. So Captain Kirk does what anyone would do in that situation and punches Gary Mitchell in the face, and then they drug him. And they bring him to the transporter room, where he regains consciousness and says, soon I'll squash you all like insects. And then they tranquilize him again. And in a weird moment, so he's completely unconscious, but yet he somehow manages to stand on his transporter pad. I wasn't quite sure how he did that, but
you'd think they would have at least one transporter pad that was like two or three wide across, that you could fit like a person and a kid, or you know, a person who couldn't stand.
Unconscious person, exactly. Well, you know, it was early in Starfleet design, Starship design, so they didn't think of these things. I guess they could have kind of like curled him up into a ball or something and put him on the pad.
Put him in a box.
Exactly.
Set up the box.
But he, luckily, he has an ability to stand upright when he's unconscious, which is good. So they beam down, and for some reason, even though this is an automated, uninhabited mining planet, it is equipped with a cell that they could put him in. And so they put him in a cell behind a force field. Mitchell, Gary Mitchell, that is. And they scrounge around for components so that they can fix the Enterprise. And as they are doing that, Mitchell and Kirk are talking. And Mitchell's like, remember when I saved your life? And Captain Kirk's like, yeah, that was great, but now you're crazy. and you remember when, you know, like 10 minutes ago, you threatened to squash us all like insects. That was not cool. And then Mitchell kind of breaks and says, you guys, I am like the next form of mankind, and you guys will not survive because I am super powerful, and throws himself at the force field, but he can't get through. But he's pushed back, and his eyes return to normal for a second, and Spock says, "It's drained him of his power. This is our chance to kill him." Spock is really, really into killing Gary Mitchell.
Yeah.
Nobody else shares as much glee with Spock as killing Gary Mitchell, but he's excited. But sadly, the moment lasts for like 10 seconds, and then his eyes are back to silver, and he is just as strong as he's ever been. And he says that he'll just keep getting stronger. And back on the Enterprise, repairs are nearly complete. Scotty puts a box on the bridge somewhere, and that's pretty much all they needed to do. So they're ready to leave. And Captain Kirk beams up and says, "Hey, Scotty, what's going on?" And Scotty says, "Oh, did you get that phaser rifle we beamed down?" And Captain Kirk is like, "What phaser rifle?" And that cues Spock walking in with this ridiculous-looking phaser rifle that he apparently is using in a plan to, once again, kill Gary Mitchell. Because he wants to be sure. And Kirk is not too pleased. And he's like, "You can't kill Gary Mitchell, Spock. We're just going to leave him here. And it'll be fine." And Spock is like, "Well, what if it isn't fine?" And so Kirk is like, "All right, your logic has won the day. I'll have Kelso," which this is so weird. He doesn't want to kill Gary Mitchell, but he has Kelso wire up this big self-destruct button that will blow up like the entire section of the planet. And Kelso as well, because Captain Kirk orders Kelso to stand next to the button. And if Gary Mitchell does anything weird, to press the button and kill himself and Gary Mitchell.
Is that before the lethal levels of radiation?
I think that is before, yes.
That he was going to flood the planet with
lethal. Yes, and then he has that idea of, well, let's flood the planet with lethal levels of radiation. No, this is before that, because then he says that after Gary Mitchell escapes. Spoiler alert, Gary Mitchell escapes. Yeah, the lethal radiation is still to come. Because, excellent. As everybody's planning, the Enterprise is repaired. Kelso has rigged up this self-destruct button. Everybody's returning back to the Enterprise. Dr. Donner is transfixed on Mitchell, and she decides that she's just going to stay on Delta Vega with him. I don't know why, but she decides that she's going to. Captain Kirk says, "No, you had to return to the ship." And Captain Mitchell says, "You should have killed me when you had your chance." And then Mitchell uses his mind and strangles Kelso with some wire, which is sad for Kelso, because Kelso was just standing there next to this button that was going to kill him anyway. But he dies strangled by some electric wire, I guess.
Looked pretty cool, though, to be honest.
It did look pretty cool. It was a cool effect, and they kind of transposed, for the slow people out there, they transposed Gary Mitchell's face over what was happening, so you could associate the two, and you wouldn't think, well, maybe on this planet, wires just kill people sometimes.
Well, it is completely automated. So, I mean, if there's a break in the wires, then maybe the wires could, like, thread themselves together.
That's true, and then they will deal with whatever broke the wire by strangling it. But that's not what happened. That's Gary Mitchell strangled that guy. And then Mitchell taunts them. He gets rid of the force field with a wave of his hand. And Donner doesn't do anything to stop him, because she turns around and she now has silver eyes too. But she doesn't look... She looks creepy, but she doesn't look as creepy as Gary Mitchell does, because Gary Mitchell is just a creep, naturally. And with the silver eyes, he's even creepier.
Double creep.
Double creep, exactly. Double plus two creep. And so Captain, he knocks out Spock and Captain Kirk and escapes with Dr. Donner. And Dr. Piper, who we never see again after this episode, happens upon Kirk and Spock unconscious. And he wakes up Captain Kirk by putting a little pill in his mouth. And Captain Kirk says, "What happened?" And Piper says, "Oh, they escaped. I saw them walking over towards this flat area of land. Let me wake up Spock, because he's still alive." And Captain Kirk says, "No, don't wake up Spock. Leave him unconscious, because if you wake up Spock, he will just want to come with me. Here's what you're going to do, Dr. Piper." And this is where the lethal radiation comes. He says, "If you and Spock beam up to the Enterprise, and if you don't hear from me in 12 hours, flood this planet with lethal radiation and kill everything on it. Like, all right.
Radiation's kind of a bad choice, just because it's not probably going to kill you instantly. It's going to kill you.
It'll take a little while. Time. It's true. Captain Kirk is now thinking straight. He needs to go off and kill one of his best friends. So he's like, I don't know what's going on. So he takes the phaser rifle that Spock ordered up, and he goes off in search of Mitchell and Dr. Donner. And Dr. Donner and Mitchell are walking around this rocky planet, and Dr. Donner's like, well, you know, this planet's not all that great. Gary Mitchell says, well, we are gods now, so we can make it great. And he waves his hand, and some plants and a really lame little spring appear. And I thought to myself, that doesn't really look much better than it did before. This is not a paradise, Gary Mitchell. But it is showing us that he has these weird powers, even more weird powers than he had before. And he senses that Captain Kirk is approaching. And he says with his weird echoey voice that, Captain Kirk, you should leave and don't approach. And Dr. Donner is like, yeah, whatever. Captain Kirk, she goes off. Dr. Donner goes off to find Captain Kirk and says, you know, really, you should leave Gary Mitchell alone because he is much more powerful. You won't be able to do anything. And Captain Kirk says, well, you really need to, you need to look inside yourself and what is being a god without compassion? And he tries to, you know, lure Dr. Donner back to the right side of this argument, but she's having none of it. So Captain Kirk tries to, I think, shoot Gary Mitchell at this point, but it doesn't do anything. And Gary Mitchell says, well, it's sad, but I'm going to have to kill one of my best friends, but at least he'll have a grave. And so he waves his hand, and a grave appears, and then he waves his hand again, and a tombstone appears. Which, now, this is a little bit of Star Trek lore, because on the tombstone, it says James R. Kirk. And, of course, everybody knows that James Kirk's middle name is Tiberius. So what was the R for? We don't know. But that's a little fun Star Trek trivia for you. Apparently, Gary Mitchell and Captain Kirk, not really that close friends, because Gary Mitchell could not remember what Captain Kirk's middle name was. It's like probably Rory or something. I don't know.
Richard.
That's right. James Richard Kirk. So Captain Kirk is fighting Mitchell, and he's not really doing a good job of it because, of course, Gary Mitchell is very powerful. And this is when Dr. Donner decides, well, I think I was wrong about Gary Mitchell. I don't think he's that nice. I think he's a creep, and he doesn't deserve all this power. And so she attacks Gary Mitchell with her wacky powers in a scene that is very reminiscent of Force Lightning in Star Wars. They throw some wacky mind electricity at each other. And that forces Gary Mitchell to lose his powers temporarily. And Captain Kirk takes this opportunity to punch Gary Mitchell in the face. Because that's what Captain Kirk does. You know, if you are make him angry, he's going to punch you in the face. And I thought to myself, Captain Kirk, why are you punching him in the face? Why don't you pick up that phaser rifle that you brought with you and shoot him? But then he doesn't do that. He punches them some more. They roll around. Gary Mitchell gets up. Captain Kirk finally picks up the phaser rifle. But as he's picking up the phaser rifle, oh no, Gary Mitchell's eyes turn back to silver. And he's once again super powerful. But they somehow push him into the grave. And Captain Kirk uses the phaser rifle to basically make a rock slide, crush Gary Mitchell. Gary Mitchell, one assumes, dies. Although it seems like that wouldn't have killed Gary Mitchell, but apparently it does. I don't know. And Dr. Donner apologizes for her actions. I guess it says on Memory Alpha, which is this Wikipedia for Star Trek episodes, that Dr. Donner dies at that moment after she apologizes. But I didn't really get that from the episode. Did you get that she died at the end?
I didn't either. And I actually looked at the same article and read that and went, I don't think. Was it wishful thinking?
I don't know. She doesn't see. She seemed like, because one of my thoughts as, I mean, I've seen this episode several times, but as I was watching it for this podcast, I thought to myself, what have they done to Dr. Donner? She's still down there. She's just hanging out because she does not die.
Helping to automate the machines.
I guess using her mind. It's the efficiency of that automated mining colony has shot through the roof. People are like, why is it producing so much ore now?
We have our secrets, and they all kind of wink.
That's right. We'll never tell. And so Kirk beams up back to the Enterprise and makes a note for Gary Mitchell and Dr. Donner's records that they died faithfully executing their duty. Kirk and Spock do something. There's some weird thing. Spock says something about, you know, I felt bad for Gary Mitchell as well. And Captain Kirk's like, oh, there's some hope for you yet, Spock, because you are not an emotionless bastard. And that's the end of the episode with, I still think that Dr. Donner is down there. And she did not die.
Still alive.
She's still alive, biding her time. Waiting for that ore ship to come in 20 years, and then she'll get out and take over the Federation.
Or she's very slowly digging up Gary Mitchell.
Oh, that is true, because he could be. I still think he's probably alive under there, so maybe she dug him out over time, using the automated tools of the mining colony to dig Gary Mitchell out. And then they break out of that planet, and they go somewhere. Maybe they finally break through the galactic barrier, and they're overlords of some galaxy.
They find a wormhole somewhere.
And then, yeah, they're in the Delta Quadrant or something. And they start. That's where the Founders come from, in the Dominion, in Deep Space Nine. It's really
yes.
Gary Mitchell and Dr. Donner.
Yes, it's canon now.
That's right. I think it was on a podcast, so it must be true. So what did you think of this episode?
I will admit, I had to watch it twice because the first time I fell asleep.
That's not a good sign.
Not because it's classic Trek, because there's some episodes of classic Trek that I adore, but not this one.
Oh, it is.
No, yeah.
It's a little. I mean, I think given that it is the second pilot, it is surprisingly good and gets a surprising. I am surprised at the amount of stuff. As I said at the beginning of the episode. That, you know, survives from this episode and comes throughout the rest of the series. But it is a little slow. Even for original Star Trek, it's a little slow.
Yeah, it's slow, and it revolves around a character that isn't... It's not even that he's not interesting, it's just he's not one of the main characters.
Yeah.
Like, if stuff was happening to Spock or Sulu or whatever, you might be more interested to kind of see how it goes, but... He could, you know, right from the beginning, he can get killed off because he's not quite a red shirt, but he's not one of the main characters.
That's right. We never see him again, so chances are he's crushed by a giant rock. Although, I mean, this is one of the classic episodes of Star Trek because, you know, where no man has gone before, it's the title, it's the pilot, so people have a fond memory of it. I don't think that if I were introducing someone to Star Trek, even the original series, that this is the episode I would show them. So I think it was wise that they not show it as the first episode ever broadcast. But it's not
bad. I was told to watch it before or instead of the other pilot.
Yes. So the other pilot is completely weird.
Yeah.
Just because the only character that is the same is Spock. So... Everything is different. So if you're going to watch that pilot, you shouldn't watch that first. You should watch... If you had to choose between which pilots to watch first, this is the pilot to watch first.
Yes.
Because, you know, you'd be like, who the heck is this Christopher Pike? What's going on? Although, what's-her-face? Majel Barrett has a role in the original pilot. So she is the second officer... Or the first officer in there. Which was interesting, but then they decided Spock will be the first officer instead of a woman.
Yeah, there was some controversy about that.
There was. So, yeah, I think overall, it's okay. A little slow. Not a great starting point. But impressive for the amount of stuff that they got right and that they continued to do. Well, actually, they may have not gotten it right, but they continued to do it, so it feels like it's right.
So too bad.
That's right. If you didn't like it, this is the episode that you could blame. So how would this compare to an early Doctor Who episode, though? That's the real question.
I could probably compare it to maybe a late First Doctor episode, maybe? Maybe middle First Doctor.
My early Doctor Who knowledge is very bad, so because I will admit, I like the reboot Doctor Who. I tried to watch some older Doctor Who, but if you think that this episode is slow, try watching some older Doctor Who episodes. They are super slow, in my opinion.
See, I'm of the opposite opinion. I find because older Doctor Who tends to have, even if they are sets, they mm-hmm. still tend to be changing sets, which looks different compared to on Trek, where you're usually in the ship.
Right.
It's the same kind of walls, same kind of rooms. And
lots of corridors.
So, I mean, they both have corridors. And if you look at them both in the 60s, you know, about the same. But I personally find Doctor Who a bit, you know, there's more running and less talking.
That's true. There is not a lot of running in this episode, and this episode has many situations in which running would be acceptable and perhaps
advantageous.
Exactly, because, you know, they're just sauntering about. Nobody seems to be in a great hurry.
I would be running any time I saw Gary Mitchell, like, away from him, before he had the silvery eyes.
That's true. Well, because, you know, he'd be creepy, and he'd say something inappropriate to you. And then I didn't even mention him holding the hand of the yeoman in the beginning for no apparent reason, which was weird.
He's consoling her, the fact that Kirk didn't even remember her name.
That's right. He's like, they're there.
He doesn't remember my name either.
It's okay. It's not just you. And he holds her hand, and then Captain Kirk's like, get us out of here, Gary. And so he doesn't let go of her hand. He just one-handedly navigates the Enterprise. And I thought,
both
really?
Hands on the wheel.
Really, Gary Mitchell, the yeoman's all right. Well, thank you, Kat, for joining me and watching this episode of Star Trek.
Thank you. It was fun.
Next on Random Trek, Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 5, Babel.